Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Monday, June 8th, welcome, friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
So what happens, Avi, when a political party finds the candidate that they think can win, but that candidate comes with baggage that many voters may find deeply troubling? Yeah, that is the question that we're talking about on the show today. It's specifically about a major moral dilemma that is facing the Democratic Party right now. Tomorrow, the state of Maine is holding its primary, and progressive Senate candidate Graham Plattner, a war veteran turned oyster farmer, he is seeking the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate. The problem is, over the course of his campaign, he has become a very controversial figure, from questionable Reddit posts, a Nazi tattoo, and marital infidelity, to more recently when women have come forward, past girlfriends he's had, and they've described behavior that they say was unsettling, intimidating, or troubling. And so all of this has broader implications about where Democrats should draw the moral line in the sand in a situation where they really, really, really need to beat Republican Maine Senator Susan Collins. And it seems like voters like Graham Plattner, at least Maine voters do. And so we're going to talk about whether character should matter. Is it time for Dems to compromise and do whatever it takes to win? We've got two really smart guests coming in. Plus, we'll also hear from a reporter from Maine who's on the ground and who has spoken to Maine voters. But this is a much bigger question just about Democrats generally. And so we'd love to hear from you. Our questions of the day: where do you draw the line on morality when political power is at stake? And what, in your mind, is disqualifying? You can give us a call. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, you can put your comments in the chat. It's a moral issue, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
And I'd add, for Republicans as well.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Lots of Republicans left the Republican Party over the last, let's say, 10 years or so.
That is true.
And I'm curious specifically, if you're out there listening, if your criteria or your standards have changed over the last decade, what you'll allow or not allow in a candidate. I'm really, really curious to hear from folks, and hopefully you guys feel comfortable calling in the show and talking about all of that with us, because it really is a personal decision on a lot of levels. So where do you draw the line of morality when political power is at stake? What do you find disqualifying? What are you willing to live with? And does it change, you know, depending on the circumstances? 888-477-9499, email studio2@whyy.org. But first, a trio of local news stories. And we start with a dispute between United Health and Mainline Health. Some patients in the Philly suburbs are starting to feel nervous as a major insurer and care provider go down to the wire in negotiations. The Inquirer had a nice story about this today. The care provider is Mainline Health. The insurer is United Healthcare. Now, 32,000 Mainline Health patients have United insurance. However, the two parties are at loggerheads. If they can't agree to a new contract by the end of this month, patients with United insurance would no longer be in network when using Mainline Health providers. And this comes shortly after United failed to reach new contracts with Lehigh Valley Health Network and Axia, two other regional care providers. Mainline has been facing some financial pressure since the pandemic. United says they're asking for price hikes that are unsustainable, and that is kind of the meat of the negotiation right now.
Yeah, and meanwhile, you know, you have these patients that are kind of in the middle. And you know, I thought about it just from a broader perspective, Avi, because from contract disputes to straight-up hospital closures, you know, our area has dealt with a lot of healthcare disruptions,
turbulence,
right?
Yeah.
A lot of turbulence, and you think this, if you live on the main line or you go to stuff that, you're immune from that. That is not the case, as we're seeing here. 32,000 people could possibly, and they probably live in the region, right? You tend to go to healthcare providers that are close to you.
Sure, yeah.
Could be disrupted. And I thought about that. I feel so sorry for patients who are in the middle of this. I mean, you might have been going to your doctor for many years, and maybe you're in the middle of a treatment, and to lose access and then to have to figure that out. Getting that first appointment could take months a lot of times. And so, you know, you just think about the disruption. You think about the turbulence, as you mentioned, in healthcare, not just on the mainland, but just all across our region. And it's getting really serious because of the rising costs.
Story number two, Cherry. Yeah.
Yeah. The number of Catholics in Philadelphia and in New Jersey is on the rise. Diocese officials told the Philadelphia Inquirer that they are seeing a conversion boom. According to the diocese in Philadelphia, there's been a 100% increase in the number of converts and lapsed Catholics seeking to be baptized or take part in the sacraments since last year. And from between 2017 to 2025, there's been a 60% increase in the number of folks coming back to the Catholic Church. In Camden, they've seen a 23% increase over the past year. And these numbers follow what has been a growing trend of people returning or simply going to the Catholic Church across the globe. And at this point, it's unclear why people are deciding to choose Catholicism, but we did a show on this last year and heard from the Archbishop, who spoke about the church actually doing outreach to the community to try to bring people back. The Inquirer also spoke to new Catholics who cited all sorts of personal reasons, like really wanting community, the craziness and uncertainty in the world, Gen Z, a lot of folks from that generation desiring a connection with a higher being. And of course, there are priest influencers on TikTok.
Oh, baby, priest
and
influencers.
There's prayer apps and all sorts of things that are making religion much more accessible. So there you go. People coming back to the Catholic Church.
I am curious. They probably don't track this. But, yeah. So there's been a 100% increase in these conversions and sort of comebacks since 2017. I'm curious, over that period of time, what's the rate of people leaving? Because to be an overall increase, right, there's you have to balance the two numbers. So, but clearly there are people who are coming back. And so that's something they can document. And you're right. It does speak to what's driving that.
They're not saying they're going every Sunday, but they are seeking out the classes.
Seeking out the classes.
And going to the classes to get communion and to get rebaptized or whatever. So those are interesting statistics. Shout out to Jason Nark for that story.
Yeah, absolutely. Story number three, speaking of influencers.
Oh, yeah.
So we started this whole segment on the main line. We're coming back to the main line now for a very different type of story. The internet is absolutely loving an all-male a cappella group from the main line called The Tonics.
Ooh,
The Tonics. Nice name. Mm-hmm. Shout out to The Inquirer for profiling them. The Tonics are made up of local dads and granddads. They've actually been around for a while, since 1990, and obviously they sound great. But they've taken off recently online for posting videos from their rehearsals. Let's take a listen. Beautiful. I like that hey in the middle. That was nice.
Yeah, multi-part harmony. I'm impressed.
So the videos are endearingly straightforward. It's just a bunch of dudes in kind of like khakis and quarter zips standing around, usually like a kitchen island in someone's house with a bunch of really nice food. And they're just rocking out.
Yeah.
A cappella style.
Liking it.
It looks like a fun club to be a part of. Now, of course, when you become famous on the internet, the trolls come out.
Yeah.
People are going to clown you a little bit. Commentators have given this group various joke names, such as JP and the Morgans.
Okay.
Boys to Gentlemen. And my personal favorite, Linkin Park.
All right.
Folks, they're called The Tonics. And put some respect on their name. Shout out, salute to The Tonics.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Exactly.
That's right. Well, you know, what can you say? Haters gonna hate. And the internet is going to internet, right? But I have to say, they sound really, really good.
Sound great.
Multi-part harmony is not easy. They're smooth. And you know what? Even with the hater rate comments, they're getting millions of views. And I have to say, we've talked about how men are lonely and they don't have friends. And they are, this is a multi-generational, men coming together around, you know, joyful singing. And to me, that's what man joy sounds like.
Yeah, if you can't sing, you go to the Catholic Church, right?
Right,
this
right.
connects the two stories.
I know, no, but I loved it, though.
What it made me think about, too, is the fact that a cappella is, like, associated with, like, high school or college, right? And there's all these really fun activities mm-hmm. that, for whatever reason...
When you get grown, you can't do it
you're
anymore.
You're not supposed to do them anymore. Yeah. You don't do them, you know? And, like, when you're in college and you're in high school, it's expected you'll join a club and you'll do something with people who have like interests. And then you become an adult and it's almost like that expectation disappears. And this reminded me yeah. of the fun of being in a club.
And I mean, I love clubs. I love singing. And people want to feel like they're together. And yeah. I mean, you know what? Put on your khakis and quarter zip. Come hang out.
These people are being genuinely themselves.
They are. And we talk about authenticity today on the show.
That's right.
And they're being authentically themselves.
Great transition. We are going to talk about authenticity in the political arena. And what exactly that means today, and also what types of personal indiscretions voters find disqualifying. We'd love to hear from you. Get on the line right now, 888-477-9499, studio2 at whyy.org. Don't go anywhere. And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Democrats are facing an uphill battle to flip the Senate in the midterms. And one key ingredient is unseating Maine's Republican incumbent, Susan Collins. All hopes rest on her likely opponent, oyster farmer and war vet Graham Plattner.
Plattner garnered early enthusiasm after billing himself as a working-class everyman with a progressive agenda. But his campaign has been marred by a series of scandals ranging from a tattoo with Nazi symbolism to troubling behavior towards women.
Despite all of it, Plattner has maintained broad support both within the party and among voters, and he is poised to win tomorrow's Democratic primary. So today we're asking, how much do Democrats really care about questions of character? Does it outweigh a candidate's policy positions or a potential election victory? And in an era of hyper-polarization, has the calculus changed?
And we would really love to hear from you on just this topic. Where do you draw the line on morality when political power is at stake? And what do you personally find disqualifying? Our number is 888-477-9499. Our email is studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the live chat.
Yes, and before we properly dive in, we've invited Michael Shepherd, political editor for the Bangor Daily News, to help us understand how folks on the ground in Maine are grappling with this dilemma. Michael, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me.
Michael, take us back a bit. Tell us about the effort just to draft Plattner to run, because it seems like there was a small group of, I guess you would say, consultants who identified this guy. Which seems like even in and of itself telling and a little out of the ordinary. Can you give us that backstory?
Yeah, there's a lot of backstory here, and it even goes back beyond that, right? Governor Janet Mills is kind of from the centrist wing of the party. She has done a lot of things to anger unions, right? Maine has been under Democratic control for 8 years, and there have been some frustrations from her left. So I think Graham Plattner is partially just an embodiment of that. She was obviously telegraphing her Senate run for months before she actually did it. This gave progressives a kind of time to go into central casting looking for their character, right? And they found a Graham Plattner who has this booming voice, who had been kind of an activist on very local issues in his neck of the woods along the you know, almost the down east coast. So they found this guy who was very compelling, was put together house parties, and they were kind of smash hits. You started hearing I first heard his name about 2 weeks before he launched. And it just kind of snowballed from there. He gets into the race in August, and unions are kind of instantly behind him. And he gave Maine Democrats, I think, an ability to use their imaginations a little bit about what a candidate could look like. And it just went on from there. And he sort of passed every test, right? In October, we learned about his Reddit posts and his tattoo of a Nazi symbol. He kind of powered through that and edged Governor Mills out of this primary. So it's just been this kind of very fast, Byrne, but of course we're learning everything about the man all at once, right? And that's why I'm on Philly NPR talking about him right now.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me, Michael. So a lot of folks outside of Maine may not understand Maine voters. And so, you know, you just mentioned all these red flags that kind of started cropping up a couple months into his campaign and have continued to sort of crop up. What is it about Maine voters specifically that allowed them to sort of power through and he finding himself being very popular despite the many red flags?
Yeah, well, I'm just old enough to have lived through the Tea Party and reported through that. And it feels a little bit like that 2010 movement where the electorate is just looking for different candidates. Mm-hmm. I mean, Maine, we have a pretty like long tradition of electing pretty boring politicians, right? That have come up through the system, right? Governor Mills is an example of that. Susan Collins obviously worked in an administration in Maine and Massachusetts. I mean, we had Olympia Snow and we have Angus King now, and you can go back in history and we kind of, you know, you pay your dues and it's kind of vertically integrated, right? With Graham Plattner, it's just different. I think that Democrats right now are going through a period of frustration. They've controlled Maine, of course, but they've seen Donald Trump win 2 elections out of 3. And I think there's a level of frustration among Democrats. Well, you know, if he's a jerk, why can't we elect our jerk? And I think that's how a lot of Democrats see this, especially in light of the new controversy. So I think it's an example. I'm not to equate Donald Trump and Graham Plattner, right? Very different men, very different circumstances. But I think that it's inescapable that there is a little bit of this pent up, not rage, but just there's this animosity toward Trump that I think is manifesting itself in candidates like Graham Plattner.
Let's assume, just for the sake of this question, that Plattner does win the primary, even though we know Mills is still on the ballot. What do you see as sort of like the main focal point, the main fight that Plattner and Collins will be having between now and November? Who are they really going to be warring over? What group of voters, and how are they going to make their sort of closing arguments as best as you can predict?
Yeah, I mean, Susan Collins has been just an electoral animal up here. She won by 9 points in 2020, despite losing in all the polls, despite Joe Biden winning the state pretty handily. So she has always done well with split ticket voters, who still exist up here, right? We've had two politicians, her and both Jared Golden, who's the retiring congressman from Northern Maine, Democrat, who has seen just a large propensity for swing voters to go their way. So I think it's really about the middle of the electorate, and certainly what we're all wondering, and what we'll kind of have to stop wondering today, right? Tomorrow is about whether Democrats are, you know, sort of handling how Democrats are handling Graham Plattner and the string of controversies. But it's going to be really about the middle of the electorate and whether they are pushed away by sort of this national environment that's not looking so good for Republicans right now. Susan Collins certainly could get dragged down in that. Was not dragged down in that fully in 2020, and was able to come back and make that race more about local issues and her unique qualities. So I think that's going to be, it's kind of going to be a familiar campaign, just a much more dynamic candidate, maybe with a lower ceiling and a higher floor in Graham Plattner.
Well, that's Michael Shepard, political editor for the Bangor Daily News. Michael, great insight, and good luck covering the rest of what has been a wild race.
Thank you very much.
And now we have two great guests joining us to unpack not just the fallout over Graham Plattner, but also to take the temperature more broadly on the role of personal integrity and character in politics today. A couple of our favorite guests, I have to say, editorializing a bit. Kelly Dittmar, political science professor at Rutgers University. Kelly, it's great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
And Solomon Jones, Philadelphia Inquirer columnist and WURD radio host. Solomon, nice to see you as well.
Nice to see you too.
Yeah, I want to read this comment from Mark from Green Lane, who says, I think we all have at least two concerns regarding the Senate race in Maine. Will Plattner become a Fetterman type if he wins, or with the Senate in the balance, will Fetterman change parties? Meaning, will Graham Plattner end up changing parties? I'm glad I'm not a Mainer with the choice I'd have to make, but I don't feel much better having voted for Fetterman. And so I wanted to sort of, you know, given that kind of brings it home for us, I wanted to sort of get both of your takes about Graham Plattner and the dilemma that it presents to the Democrats. And Solomon, we'll start with you, and then we'll go to you, Kelly.
Well, I think
the problem is probably with the party in Maine. You have to vet your candidates before they get vetted by the public, before they get vetted by the internet, before they get vetted by the other party. You have to find everything about them before you put them up as your candidate. And so that's a problem with the party. I think at this point, they're stuck with Graham Platner. And I think that they're probably going to have to run with it. Now, the comparison for me is not necessarily with Fetterman if I'm the Democratic Party in Maine. My comparison is with Trump. Mm-hmm. This is a guy with 34 felony convictions. This is a guy who's been held liable for sexual abuse. This is a guy who's been held liable for defaming the person who accused him of sexual abuse. He's been held liable for cheating people at Trump University. He's got documented 30,000 lies at the Washington Post. So, I mean, when you look at Graham Platner as compared to Donald Trump,
it doesn't look that bad, right?
Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what the party's going to have to run with, and they're going to have to hope that he doesn't turn out to be a John Fetterman.
Yeah, and so your thoughts, Kelly, on just this dilemma that Graham Platner is presenting to the Democratic Party?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Solomon that at the end of the day, campaigns are about contrast. And so what the voters in Maine are probably going to do is they're going to say, sure, I may not like this guy, and I may not like the behavior that we've now seen, the comments, the tattoo, the infidelity, but my comparison or my comparator is a Republican Party that's accepted this type of behavior at the highest levels and in some ways condoned it. And so they may not see the disparity. That said, you know, certainly as somebody myself who does gender and politics, I'm concerned about the bar, right? Mm-hmm. And the bar we set is, well, if they're not worse than the other guy, then we have to go with them. And we understand why, right? The politics are real. The implications of having a majority in the Senate are real on issues well beyond Graham Platner and well beyond Maine. But it does set up a situation where you have voters have to vote for somebody who fundamentally they may believe is misogynist or racist. And then that becomes part of the brand of the party that, in this case, the Republicans can use against Democrats in general elections across the country in the fall.
We're asking you, where do you draw the line on morality when it comes to political power? What is disqualifying for you when you're considering a candidate? What's disqualifying? 888-477-9499, email studio2@whyy.org. Brian says both sides have a lot to answer for. Let's bring in Carol on the line from Cherry Hill. Carol, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, thank you. I am a lifelong Democrat, and by the way, sustaining donor for WHYY.
Thank you for all your programs
and events I've been to lately. Look, politicians are human beings. No one's perfect. Both sides have had character flaws throughout history. But for me lately, and this is piggybacking on your guest comments, with a president who's a convicted felon, convicted sex offender, multi-time adulterer, the bar isn't low. It's disappeared completely. But for me, that shouldn't be an excuse to ignore moral character for the sake of political power. Because if we keep doing that, where does our country end up? What example is this setting for my grandchildren? It's so depressing. And I hate the spot that we've gotten to in our country.
And it's not.
I don't know what the answer is.
Absolutely. I'm just curious, Carol. And like you said, it's the spot that the voters have been put in here. But I'm just curious, like, based on what you know, if you were living in Maine, like, would this be a tough call for you? Would you consider voting for a Susan Collins, or do you think the stakes are just too high for Democrats to consider doing that?
I am so happy I'm not in Maine. I'm in Jersey. I would be wrestling with this. I would really be up at night wondering what to do. I am a Democrat, but I have voted for Republicans in the past. Susan Collins has, you know, many times gone against Trump, and I applaud her for that when she's taken a stand. So this guy, I honestly don't know.
And Carol, quick follow-up question to you. I mean, would you be even wrestling about this? Would this even be a question you had to ask 5, maybe 10 years ago if this type of candidate was presented to you?
Would I have to ask that question? No. Yeah. I think I would vote for Collins if it was 10 years ago. Yeah. But that's not where we are right now. I mean, with the polarization and the power grabbing and everything that we're in, we're in a completely different situation.
Yeah, well, Carol, you're a great sport, by the way. We grilled you.
Yeah. Thank you, Carol. Carol was down with Gable.
Thank you. Again. Margaret chimes in and says the good people of Maine should vote for Democrat Plattner, for Senate Republican Collins, and all the Republican senators who bow down to Trump's immoral corruption, cruelty, and white nationalist racism have broken faith with the voters who depend on them to protect our economy, health, education, food security, and right to vote. I want to get a historical perspective, Kelly. Do you think our standards have changed? Because here we are having this conversation in 2026. Mind you, Bill Clinton wasn't exactly squeaky clean.
Sure.
That was a while ago at this point. Do you think people's tolerance for personal indiscretion has changed measurably, you know, qualitatively? Or do you feel like, look, we're just having the same conversation in a different way through the generations?
Yeah. I mean, I think at the top, it's important to say this, as I said before, like this behavior hasn't been disqualifying in politics for the entirety of our history. And in fact, you heard Ro Khanna this weekend say, like, well, there's a red line. And the red line is between, right, in this case, infidelity or comments versus a violence, or he said relationship with minors.
And Ro Khanna, by the way, is a progressive who backs Plattner.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, like, Democrats and Republicans have worked themselves into knots to kind of condone or at least allow for this type of behavior forever. I will say there's been interesting studies done on this in terms of scandals. So on infidelity, that number, so the number of Americans who say they're less likely to vote for a candidate if they were accused of infidelity or found of having an affair, went down from like 46%, again, already relatively low, in 2011 to about 37% in 2016. And the assumption is it's continued to go down. There haven't been more recent surveys. There's been work on scandals. Scholars have done this work and said, like, how important are scandals in shaping whether somebody gets reelected? And they found from the 90s to 2010, less and less and less important. And so part of it speaks to the polarization of the time and this fact that it's more about my team winning than anything else.
That's what I was going to ask you, Solomon. Yeah. Whether you think this trend is about polarization or it's about changing just moral standards in general in society. I think you can make a strong argument for either. That people's willingness to accept what Kelly just laid out is driven by the fact that they just hate the other side so much that they're willing to look past it. Or we've just become generally more accepting of people's flaws, of marital indiscretion, just like our mores have generally changed. Which, you know, like, explanation do you find most compelling?
Well, when I look at the numbers, I see that 53% of white women voted for Trump both times.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. Knowing all of this about him. And so, to me, the fact that we're now looking at this when it comes to a Democrat, someone who identifies himself as a progressive, would be laughable if this wasn't so serious. We are at this point at a point where our communities are under attack. Women are under attack. Black people are under attack. Immigrants are under attack. And so I think that people are willing to accept indiscretions as they've always been, but I think even more now because the stakes are so high.
Right. So that speaks to polarization. Absolutely. That speaks to, like, just you cannot let the other side get power.
Absolutely.
And Troy says, whatever it takes to get Trump and his cronies out of office.
Yeah, to point.
Louise from Princeton says, the big difference between Plattner and so many on the other side is he admits he has done bad things and he apologizes for it over and over. He acknowledges and apologizes. Yes, he is flawed. He has demonstrated far better character, however, than Trump, Paxton, and so many others. And so, but I got to mention some names in this conversation, right? That came up. Al Franken.
Yep.
You know, Andrew Cuomo.
Yep.
You know, Anthony Weiner. You know, we've had so many people who have come up through the Democratic ranks. They were shamed, and had to resign in shame to never, hopefully, you know, to come back again. And so I want to talk about the hypocrisy that this moment, yes, the country is divided. Yes, the Democrats want to win, but are they being big, fat hypocrites now because they just want to defeat Trump? Kelly, I'll start with you on that one.
I mean, that's a concern, right? I think to me and other voters, which is to say, like, if you're holding yourself to a standard, you're attacking the Republican Party. I mean, this has been a point of attack on the Republican Party. I will suggest, though, not a very effective one,
yeah.
But a point of attack on right. the Republican Party in recent elections, which is to say, this is the party that doesn't care about this type of immoral behavior, this type of racism, this type of sexism and misogyny. Mm-hmm. And so then you support a candidate who is at least weak on that, right? And again, people have different perceptions of this behavior. For those of us who are concerned about kind of systemic forces of sexism and racism, it's a pattern of behavior.
Yeah.
So yes, you can change your perspective. You can become more reformed as it pertains to gender and race. But if you're still in 2025 treating women in the way that we think Graham Platner, or we know to yeah. some extent Graham Platner was mm-hmm. treating women, that's concerning not because of his personal life, but because of his orientation to issues that are going to be important to women, and the comments he's made, obviously, and the tattoo around Jewish people, Black people. Like, you're concerned then, what does that mean when you're in office and you're confronted with debates about issues concerning these communities?
And so you know, Solomon, I want to hear your thoughts about the hypocrisy here. And I mean, like, and the other thing that, you know, because do you think that they would accept, you know, voters would accept this type of misconduct, this type of flaw among other candidates, a woman or a person of color?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that it would be more deeply scrutinized mm-hmm. if it was a woman or if it was a person of color. Remember, Kristen Sinema had an affair allegedly with one of her bodyguards, and she was kind of, you know, forced out. And so I think when you look at what's happening here, of course there's hypocrisy, because Democrats pretend that they're not in the business of politics. I've been a Democrat my whole life. The business of politics is not a clean business. It's not a pristine business. It is a business that is, you know, sometimes very dirty, very underhanded. And so for Democrats to pretend that somehow they're holier than thou, I think is absolutely hypocritical. I think they have to hold on to two or three values. They have to run on those, and they have to try to be effective when they get in, realizing that they're human beings.
So
too.
You're saying hold on to two or three things.
Yeah.
Everything
yep.
else got to
let
it go.
Stuff,
let it go.
That's right.
We want to hear from you, by the way. Where do you draw the line on morality when political power is at stake? What is personally disqualifying for you? Give us a call. 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. YouTube, Facebook. Drop a comment in the chat. Leslie says, Senator Collins is a decent person, even though I completely disagree with her on politics. As a lifelong Democrat, I could never bring myself to vote for someone like Platner. We should not lower our standards just for a win. So you say it's a mistake, Solomon, but then who is left? Who is left to sort of uphold some sort of moral, ethical standard for the people who serve us in the highest offices? If the Democrats don't do it,
right.
If the Republicans don't do it, who is left?
And that's exactly the point. Who is left? And so you have to make a decision on which party you think will best uphold your values, will best protect your community, will best make sure that people can hold on to the rights that they've had and have fought hard for in this country. Again, I come from a community that's under attack right now. Mm-hmm. The 14th Amendment was put in place for Black people to be citizens of this country, and you have an administration that is saying we want to do away with the 14th Amendment. We want
if
to
that,
do away with birthright
case,
citizenship.
If that wasn't the case, would you be more sensitive to ethical concerns?
I don't have the luxury of thinking that way.
But
I don't have the luxury of hypotheticals right now, because again, my community is under attack.
But do you trust like a candidate like Graham Platner is going to push the button when it comes to your community, given what you know about him?
I trust him more than I would trust Susan Collins. It's a hard choice.
Yeah.
But I would have to take him over Susan Collins. And again, I voted for Fetterman, interviewed him face to face, and watched him turn his back on everything that we voted for.
Let me bring in a caller on the point, I think, because Fetterman's going to come up in this call, I think.
Yeah.
This is
sure.
Eric from the suburbs of Philadelphia. Let's push the breakout a little bit and bring in Eric. Eric, you're on Studio 2. Would love to hear your question or comment.
Thanks, guys. Lifelong independent, voted for both. I also campaigned for Fetterman. And the rules have changed. You cannot unilaterally disarm. I've never been a Democrat. I look at myself now as far to the left of a Democrat. And the policies that are being placed now and the rule of law being disregarded cannot mean that the Democratic Party just quits and says, unless you're a perfect person, we can't put you up there.
Mm-hmm. Is there, Eric, is there, Eric, for you, and look, if you don't feel comfortable answering this on live radio, understand, but is there something a Democrat could do to lose your vote, even if they held all of the policy positions that you agree with?
In today's world?
Yeah.
No.
Wow.
Not at all. Because that's the other side. We cannot... You're literally watching. I'm near retirement. I've watched both parties when they fought, but they cooperated. You now have one party that is ignoring substantially the other party in Washington and in local elections as well. Philadelphia doesn't see that as much because it's a strong Democratic city.
Yeah.
But nationally, the Republicans have changed the game. And it is not a, it's not a country that I'm about to tear up. It's not a country that I'm starting to be able to recognize.
Wow.
And it's, I'm fine with conservatives. I used to classify myself as one. But anymore, I don't see that. I don't see this complete and utter disregard for everything that used to be norms. The good part is we've woken up as a society. We've realized that norms are not law.
Yeah.
Trump, for what he is, really does know that, and he's a master of it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that call.
The same thing. Yeah. You're welcome. Have a good one.
Yeah, thank you, Eric. Oh, my goodness.
From the suburbs of Philadelphia. We would love to hear from you, by the way. 888-477-9499. Our email is studio2@whyy.org. A few more comments to get to on the other side of this break. We're with Solomon Jones and Kelly Dittmar. Don't go anywhere. This is Studio 2 on WHYY.
Welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman. Aaron, we're talking about the role character plays in politics today and if things are changing in the era of Trump and our hyper-partisan politics where both sides feel the stakes are simply too high.
Yeah, with us we have Solomon Jones, Philadelphia Inquirer columnist and WURD host. We also have Kelly Dittmar, political science professor at Rutgers University. And of course, we want to hear from you. Where do you draw the line on morality when political power is at stake? What, in your mind, is disqualifying? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, you can put your comments in the chat. And I got to quickly read this comment from Sean, who says, in a perfect world, we would clean house on both sides, but we have to be pragmatic and work with what we've got. Taking back the Senate is crucial. I look at all the money put into publicizing his scandals, referring to Graham Plattner, and that tells me they are afraid.
Ray from Westchester says, I feel trapped in our two-party system. If we had ranked choice voting systems, we wouldn't have to compromise as many morals and values when we vote. I want to return to that call, that really just incredible call we had on the other side of the break, Kelly, because we heard from a voter who said, look, there's really nothing that a Democrat candidate could do to lose my vote at this point, except for change their policies, essentially. It does feel like an echo of 2016 and hearing from Trump voters in that cycle and people saying, look, this guy is fighting for the America I believe in. The other side is trying to ruin our country. Now, of course, people are going to say they're wrong, right? But their willingness to look past all the skeletons in Donald Trump's closet, I think we're rooted in something of the same response, even if it's coming from a totally different political lens. I'm just curious for your thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, again, we are at a point where you're on Team D or you're on Team R. I actually think it speaks to your last commenter's point about the inability for third parties to be successful. Fascinatingly enough, of course, in Maine, they do have RCV. Ranked choice voting.
Yeah.
So it is a state in which actually there is more possibility that you could come from another party and offer an alternative. But when we're in an environment where third parties basically, for the most part, cannot win, you are really forced to choose between two. And that creates for voters a real challenge of who's going to be the best. And often you'll hear folks say, like, the lesser of two evils.
Yeah. I'm surprised that hasn't come up in the comments yet, honestly.
And I will say one more thing. It's bad for democracy in the sense that then you have people not turn out to vote, right?
Because they're disenchanted.
They come out and they say, like, there's nobody good here. I don't support anybody. I have very little trust in this system or these people. And so I may just stay home altogether.
By the way, I want to bring in a caller. And before I do that, I'll remind you our question of the day. Where do you draw the line of morality when political power is at stake? What's disqualifying? 888-477-9499 is the number. The email is studio2@whyy.org. Colin from Newcastle is on the line. Colin, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Well, I would just like to say that not only is Glenn Plattner a very odd choice in, well, any sort of race, obviously, because of the fact his past and also his tattoos and also his comments, but also the fact, well, he's just apologizing. On one hand, that's great, but on the other hand, words aren't as powerful as actions. We could see that from California's race with Tom Steyer, where he was saying that he was a progressive, but at the same time, he's a billionaire that has a lot of stocks in both gas, oil, and so on and so forth. But at one time, I believe, and I came from Texas, mm-hmm. I know that words can speak powerful from actions, but at the same time, you have to balance it out and make sure that, like, everything is well balanced, and you have to pay for the sins that you did before you really say, hey, I'm a progressive and I want to help you, and so I want to make sure that you do well.
Colin, quick follow up for you. I mean, what would you like to see if you had a flawed candidate that did some things that, you know, sort of ruffled feathers of voters? What would they have to do in order to rehabilitate themselves in your eyes?
Well, honestly, I feel like it just needs, like I said, balance it out. I came from Texas. I know from extreme from not extreme, and I can get why people don't want to, like, get rid of their values. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's a very hard line to cross, and I feel like they should really just balance it out.
Yeah.
That's all you need to do is just balance it out and take away the good from the bad.
Thank you, Colin from Newcastle, for that comment. New voter in his 20s there. I want to sort of ask you about the bigger picture here, because, you know, one of the things that Graham Plattner said this weekend is that him being able to find success would mean that regular people who were not perfect could run and under the Democratic flag and find success. And so your thoughts on that? Like, do you think that if a candidate like Graham Plattner is able to be successful, is able to overcome these purity tests despite flaws in his background, that this will, inevitably encourage more people to run and step out there and be Democrats and run for office and maybe even get better Democrats in the long run, Solomon and Kelly?
So I think that no candidate is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when they portray themselves as perfect, those are the people you need to look at a little bit more closely. You know, we talked about Donald Trump being able to win despite skeletons in his closet. Well, his skeletons aren't in the closet. Like, they're out.
They're all on the floor.
They moonwalking. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you know, skeletons and all of that, I think we all have skeletons. And I think that, you know, people have to be honest about who they are. I think the red line is probably going to be hypocrisy, where you're trying to pretend that you're something that you're not. Mm-hmm. I think if you're honest about who you are,
but
if you're honest about what your values
are, there have to be something.
Well, guess what? If it's a red line that's that bad, then you're under arrest. If it's a red line that's that bad, you're in prison.
Yeah.
If it's a red line that's that bad, you're charged, right? And so what's happening, I think, in terms of this is this is accusations. They're bad accusations. It's awful. But for me, again, when I look at my community and I look at the bigger picture, having worked for a congressman, having worked in city council and knowing how legislative bodies work, the majority rules.
Yeah.
And so you have to get that majority and you have to figure out how you're going to do it. And some of those candidates are going to be flawed.
Do you think, though, and maybe the answer is no at all. Like, does it actually influence policymaking at some point downstream? You let in enough people with enough of checkered past judgment questions.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that make the laws and pass the laws.
Right.
Like, does it at some point actually affect policymaking? And I think you can make the opposite argument, because you said there's no one that's, you know, squeaky clean. I would say Jimmy Carter, like, pretty darn, like, close to that. Mm-hmm. And he got all the way to being president. And people would say,
how long ago was that?
And he was ineffectual, maybe. 70. And Bill Clinton, yeah, not squeaky clean, right, maybe more effective. Like, I'm not saying it does. I'm saying, do you worry it does? Downstream, you let in enough of these people and they make worse policy decisions.
Well, you know, I've had many jobs and I wear many hats. One of them is a Baptist minister, right? And so there's forgiveness. There is reconciliation.
Second chance, yeah.
There is change. Mm-hmm. And so you have to make room for that. Again, everybody has skeletons. Everybody has something, yeah, that they don't want other people to know. And I think we have to take account for that in our politics as well.
And Callie, get in. And yeah, then, you know, talk about that, because that was the thought that came to mind when Solomon was talking. We say we're a second chance society. Sure. And Democrats push that more than Republicans in many ways.
I think it goes back to, okay, so no candidate is perfect, but there are 100 U.S. senators in the United States. So the idea that we can't hold these folks to a higher standard, like, and I think that is a real debate, right? Like, because on one hand, we say we want the every person, the every man, yeah, the every. And so it's good to experience these flaws. Sure. But I think this concern about the downstream effects of, like, well, is this going to affect their policy decisions down the line? Yeah. Again, is this a pattern of behavior and character, or do we know that they've changed? I think it goes back to the vetting. And I think what Solomon said earlier is a great point, which is maybe the problem. We're having this debate now. Mm-hmm. We should have had these conversations a long time ago about Graham Plattner. And honestly, even in the October, like, we should, the accountability mechanisms for those doing the recruiting, those giving money, those in power in both parties who often decide who gets to move forward.
On that point, from all that I've read of the people that recruited him, and I don't know them, I've never talked to them, they seem completely unapologetic about this. They're like, basically, this is what we got. This is what we almost wanted, in a sense. I mean, I'm not saying they wanted him to have these scandals, but every quote I've seen from them is kind of like, well, this is what the voters get to decide. We got a real person in front of them. We went out and found. They almost seem proud.
But it speaks to the values of those folks doing the recruiting, which I think is something we should maybe interrogate.
But they called him a character a little bit earlier. I think the guy from Maine, called him a character.
That's
I think that was the perfect word.
That's right.
He's a character.
Yeah.
He's not necessarily this person that they're portraying him to be. He's a character. And when he gets there, if he gets there, if he beats Susan Collins, which is a long shot, then all they need him to do is vote how he needs to vote with the Democrats.
Which is how we view politicians.
That's it.
And let's bring in another caller. We have Len from Magnolia, New Jersey on the line. Len, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment? And could you keep it brief for us?
I will do my best. My comment is, I think your entire premise is not correct. The premise is that we are lowering our values in some way by accepting this man. This man has told us a great deal about his history. And when you compare him to other people, Anthony Cuomo had a criminal charge of forcible touching against him and major league serious allegations. Anthony Weiner was convicted federally. The Al Franken thing was ridiculous to start from. Mm-hmm. And there are no backed up allegations. The only real allegations that we have is that he made people uncomfortable, and the primary accuser is a Republican operative.
Yeah.
The whole thing is specious to start with. Maybe instead of ridiculously running people out for stuff that is not clear, we need to look at real human beings and understand that when they are telling us who they are now and who they were, we need to believe them.
So, yeah. Lynn, for you, is the red line like a criminal charge, essentially? Like, it has to be charged?
Well, I think we have criminal charges. We have to do something. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So an indictment of some sort, not even a conviction, but an indictment. Okay.
Lynn, from Magnolia. And the Cuomo got thrown out before that criminal charge got thrown away. So he was kind of under indictment, not quite, but...
Let me squeeze in one more caller if we can. This is Elise from Pennsylvania as we get ready to wind down the show. Just want to get your voice in here, Elise. You're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Oh, I was just commenting about how we have all our standards are lowered. And if a person is going to cheat on their wife, which is what they all seem to do, look at JFK every day, LBJ, Clinton, all down the line. You can't judge them by that, I guess. I can. I don't vote Democratic, so there you are.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Thank you. That's Elise from Pennsylvania. I just got to ask you as we get ready to wrap up. So what will you be looking for to determine whether or not, you know, this will become the new national standard? Do you think that it will be this idea, or is this just a main issue, their problem, versus this is going to be something that crops up in almost every state in almost every Democratic election or more and more elections?
What I hope is, again, that the party and that the campaigns will vet their candidates themselves so that they don't have to be vetted on the internet, they don't have to be vetted by the media, that they have found all of the skeletons and decided whether this is someone they want to put forward. Having said that, I think that this is an American problem. I think that we are at a point where it's all about the majority. Right now, Donald Trump is running rampant because he has a Senate majority and he has a House majority, and they refuse to stand up to him and refuse to use their congressional power as the check and balance it was designed to be in the Constitution. And so you have to have some variety in terms of, the Senate and in terms of the House. So you need majorities. If you can't get majorities, you cannot hold him in check.
Yeah. Kelly, your closing thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that the vetting and that piece is a part of it. The polarization we talked about is going to guide behavior. I think we're going to see that in this election. But I'm interested in, a couple of callers talked about words versus actions. Yeah. And I think we need to think about which words and which actions, right, we're hearing. So we can hear Graham Plattner say, I'm reformed, I don't believe in this more. But we actually do have his words from previous posts, et cetera, and actions and text messages, et cetera. So even that distinction needs more interrogation of, like, which words, which actions would make somebody change their mind against their party or their team.
And that's what it comes down to. Kelly Dittmar, political science professor at Rutgers. Always appreciate your time on the show, Kelly.
Thank you.
And same to you, Solomon Jones, Philadelphia Inquirer columnist and WURD radio host. Solomon, so grateful that you're here.
Thank you so much.
And Michael from Havertown, sorry we could not get to you, but thank you to all the callers and folks who wrote in online and via email. We appreciate you. And of course, we appreciate our producers, Debbie Bilzer, Hazel May Bryan, and Paige Murray Bessler. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calique engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will talk to you tomorrow.